Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game, presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Property managers, if you manage it, they maintain it. Visit Green Ventures Landscaping. .com. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We will have the Rob Rant later this hour. Charles Robinson will be with us at 8 o'clock. We will get into all things NFL with him, so looking forward to that. Taking your thoughts in the meantime at 615-737-1025. So, Joe, since the Titans have moved to Nashville, so since they've been either the Tennessee Oilers or the Tennessee Titans, there is a statistical benchmark that they have not hit yet so far as it relates to the quarterback position, and that is a 4,000-yard passer. Now, the franchise in general does have some. Warren Moon did it a couple times. So that's a long time ago at this point. This is the franchise has had a 4,000-yard passer, and I wonder, is that something for Cam Ward this year that is even realistic? Should it be something that he is aiming for? Is it absolutely insane to even utter the phrase 4,000-yard passer with Cam Ward in year two? So I took a look last night at, you know, the previous draft class and kind of what they did in year two. So Caleb Williams of the Bears in year one, he threw for 3,500 yards, 20 touchdowns, 6 picks. Last year, he was at 3,942. So, I mean, he didn't reach 4,000 yards, but he was, you know, 58 yards away from doing so. Bo Nix in year two last year threw for 3,900 yards, 3,931, 25 touchdowns, 11 picks. Drake May was the crazy kind of like just absolute skyrocket of statistics. He only played 13 games his rookie year, and he threw for 2,200 yards, 2,276. So he went from 2,276 in 13 games his rookie year to 4,394 in 17 games in his second year. So you're talking about, you know, over a 2,000-yard jump from a yards-per-game perspective. He jumped up almost 100 yards. I mean, he was 175 a game his rookie year. He was 258 a game his second year. So that's an insane jump from year one to year two. And I don't know, I mean, I'd have to go back through the history of the league and look at how many people have made more of a jump than that from year one to year two, purely from a yardage standpoint, that Drake May did last year. But the point is, like, Williams, Nix, and May, and I didn't include Jaden Daniels or Penix here because both of them were hurt. So Williams, Nix, and May all were basically right on the doorstep of 4,000 yards or over the line of 4,000 yards in year two. You know, Cam Ward threw for 3,169 yards last year, Joe, on a horrible Titans team. We've talked about the additions that the Titans have made. They're much better at receiver, at least they should be heading into this year. They've got Brian Daboll in the fold. Should be a better offensive operation. So, Joe, I ask you, should 4,000 yards be on the table for Cam Ward this year, which would mark something a Titans quarterback has never done before?
I don't think so, because you have to look at the situations with those teams. Now, you know, with Knicks, you know, very, very good defense. But, you know, not a ton of running game. I think the Titans formula is going to be defense and running the football. I think if this offensive line is going to be good, it starts with the physicality of running the football. I mean, that's where I think J.C. Latham, I think that's why he moved back to right tackle. I mean, I think that there's hope there. And I think running the football, being in low-scoring games, relying on that's also like you're counting on Pollard to still be good. You're counting on Spears. By the way, there's some buzz about Spears in camp. I'm sure you've noticed.
Don't care.
Yep, we'll see. But the other guy, I mean, I'm intrigued by Singleton. I think they're going to be running the football. I think they're going to be playing defense. I think they'll be playing low-scoring games. I think that's the formula to win. Even go back to like a long time ago, like the McNair years where he could have a great game and throw for 180. It's a different game now. I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but I think it's that kind of formula. I think if the Titans win games this year, they're winning games, and I know this is exciting for some people, but I mean, it's just what it is. I think they're winning games like 20-17. And so if they're not as good on defense, if they are – like, if he does approach 4,000, I almost feel like that's bad because it might be a lot of empty calories and multi-score deficits in the fourth quarters of games.
That could be. I mean, you could go Blake Bortles on us if that's the case. Like,
right.
Like, in some ways, I'm kind of surprised he threw for 3,100 yards last year, given how awful that team was, right?
But like, I think that's a little bit of that too, right? I mean, a little bit is some of those games where, you racked up some yards from behind against soft zone defenses.
Yeah. Like, look, Cam Ward throwing for 4,000 yards this year, like, it's down the list in terms of, like, importance for his development and what that looks like. It is interesting that the Titans have not had a guy who's done that since they've moved to Tennessee in an era in the NFL where that has become increasingly more and more common, right? Like, I mean, forget 4,000 yards. We've seen some guys move past the 5,000-yard mark in recent years. So, like, we're in an era in the NFL, or at least we have been, where that has become more of a common thing to have a 4,000-yard passer. Now, I will say, you look at the NFL the last couple of years, Joe, and I think the defenses have caught up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it looked like for a while that, 4,000 yards was going to become like the new baseline for quarterbacks. And that's not been the case over the last couple of years. The scoring's gone down a little bit. Like, defenses have caught up. So I'm interested to see from a league perspective what that looks like this year. But look, whether it's 4,000, no, but like I do think with the receiving core that the Titans should have this year, like I think you ought to be on the other side. Like you ought to, if you're rounding up, you ought to be on the other side of 3,500, right? Like that's my thing. Like I was looking at his over-under on FanDuel Sportsbook, and I think it's 3,250. Like if he ends up at 3,250, like to me, that's pretty disappointing. Like I think it needs to be higher than that. And maybe it plays out the way that you just threw out there where the Titans are just a good defensive team and they're protecting leads late in games. And obviously you're not throwing the ball if you're doing that, or maybe not even protecting leads. Maybe they're just within a one score game and they could still operate their offense the way that they want to operate their offense. I mean, that would be a step forward in the right direction. But I do think like this is a significantly more talented wide receiver room than they had a year ago. And that should translate into better passing numbers for Cam Ward.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree for sure. I mean, the receivers should make a difference. So it's just like the volume, the passing yards volume can be deceiving, And so like you could have a couple of 400s in there that are just like totally blowouts or something like that. I think you're right. Like around 3,500, you could see. But I mean, to me, it's like 1.59 on yards per attempt. That's the number.
Yes.
Like if I could pick a number of his, certainly, you want the completion percentage to be higher than 59.8 too. You want to be hopefully in the mid-60s. But the yards per attempt, that is an indication of just a woeful passing. And 5.9 is just a bad, bad number. I mean, can he get to in the sevens in yards per attempt? If that's the case, whether it's with 4,000 with more than I'm envisioning, or, you know, more games that are a little bit close to the vest, low scoring, low tempo, but he is efficient regardless in the sevens there. And as we've talked about, the touchdowns too. I mean, you got to be in the 20s for sure, you know, somewhere in the 20s, and hopefully keep those picks under 10. That's one of the numbers from last year. That was a good one.
I mean, you bring up yards per attempt. I mean, I brought up all these other guys. Like Nick's last year was 6.4 an attempt, which is really not a great number.
No.
Caleb Williams was 6.9. And then you get at Drake May, and it's like 8.9 per attempt, which is just insane.
Yeah, 8.9 is a – man, that's a big number. And that's the thing, like I mean, he had overall, I mean, yeah, you know, 4,400 yards. It still didn't feel like it when you watched the Patriots, right? Like that it was like this – wing it around to that extent kind of offense. But I mean, and you know, 72% at 4,400 plus the 8.9. I mean
it really was an unbelievable year for me.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah, you know, Darnold 8.5, Lamar 8.4, Daniel Jones 8.1, Josh Allen 8, Jared Goff 7.9, Matthew Stafford 7.9, your guy Jordan Love 7.7. Those are the numbers you want. Get Cam into the realm of, you know, Tyler Shuck 7.3, Justin Herbert 7.3, even Stroud was 7.2. Again, no one stat tells you everything, but that's a pretty. I mean, that one is one that I really value. You know, obviously there's a more advanced stats too, the EPA stuff, of course, but the yards per attempt typically, you know, the better guys are the ones at the high end of that. And when you get into Cam's area, you know, he was down there with Phil Rivers, both 5'9". I forgot Phil Rivers played last year. You know, Flacco at 6. Davis Mills, 5'8". You're in the Dylan Gabriel, Tyrod Taylor neighborhood. You know, that's not where you want to be.
I expected Davis Mills to rise above that number. Did not happen.
Yes.
Did not happen.
Well done.
We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. What are the statistical benchmarks that you're looking for Cam Ward in year two? Is 4,000 yards even on the table for you when it comes to Cam Ward? We'll take more of your thoughts on that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game, taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Titans training camp underway. You can keep up with Titans training camp with 1025 The Game. Play your interviews and more as you get prepped for the upcoming Titans season. Coverage of Titans training camp presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants, Parman Tractor and Equipment, and Tri-State Water, Power, and Air. Joe, a lot of thoughts on the Cam Ward front. Keith says, I don't think he'll hit that 4,000 number this year. But maybe next year, after they spend some more time addressing the offensive line, even though they added some good receivers, I feel like he's still not going to have enough time to throw. Caleb says, you'd think he'd be able to throw for 235-yard average this year, but I just don't believe in the offensive line to consistently protect Ward to allow him to have games where he throws for 280 or 300 yards. I think he can do it. I just don't think he will because of the offensive line. A lot of shade being thrown the offensive line ways. Offensive line's way on the text line, Joe.
Yeah. Well, any sort of offensive projection conversation, it's hard to not – you're going to get there pretty quickly. How much is the offensive line going to hurt you in that regard? And, you know, early on it's not great. Not great returns. I mean, we're going to get more information, better information next week. I know they're back out there today, but you know, obviously next week – out there in the shadow of the substation, we'll see how they do there. And
better suit up, man.
Yeah, they wear double pads. Everybody look like Eric Dickerson out there. Wear every single pad that you can possibly wear on the football field to save yourself from the substation. But yeah, I mean, that's a totally fair knock on the whole idea. Is he going to be able to comfortably, you know, navigate the pocket? Will he have clean pockets? Is he going to be running for his life like he did too often last year?
Craig says 3,500 yards is a 205-yard average. As slanted as the rules are towards the offense, I'd like to see that. It would show we probably have two competent receivers and it would take some load off of the running game with an aging Pollard and, I assume, an injured Spears. This is from Craig on the text line. I mean, when you break it down that way, like, it's really shouldn't be that hard to get the 3,500 yards, but it's harder than you'd think in the NFL. It just is, man. It's just harder than you'd think.
Well, it's with anything, you know. It's like rushing, you know. It's like, I mean, you know, 1,000-yard season, you average like 58 yards a game, you know. But it's like, yeah, but you'll have that 29-yarder, and as a quarterback, you'll have that 131-yarder, you know, and it might even be an okay. That's the thing. I do think this team is built for low yardage numbers to not be devastating if the defense is what it's supposed to be and if you can run the football. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like it's that hard to get. I think 3,500 would be a pretty good outcome. I mean, that would blow the
over away.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, the over-under for him is 3,250 on FanDuel.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a good way to look at it. You know, Ed's saying, again, EPA is, again, that's expected points added, and it's an attempt to, you know, to basically try to take all the factors into account to be able to judge, you know, quarterback performance. Just like a lot of these advanced stats, right? You're trying to do more than just your basic numbers, and you're trying to account for conditions. Like Drake May last year, EPA, I mean, he was he led the league 169.96, but I mean, like, you know, so it's 0.26 EPA per play. So he added 0.26 of a point per play, which I know some people are like, what the hell does that mean? But I mean, what it means is, like, he was tremendous last year. I mean, Stafford's EPA was 109 compared to Drake's, and I'm trying to find Cam's. I know that we talked about it at some point last year.
But I mean, think about the names. Like, Drake May was in first. I think Jordan Love was second at plus 120. Stafford, Allen, Mahomes. That was your top five. I mean, pretty darn good quarterbacks, right? So it does. I mean, it is a number that relates pretty strongly to strong quarterback play.
Right. So Cam Ward was minus 143.2 EPA. So minus 0.17 EPA per dropback. Okay. So, yeah, that's bad. That's bad. Now, was that because of factors around him? I mean, you're trying to isolate the quarterback with this. You know, I think yes, to some extent. I mean, the hard part is, you know, psychologically being able to show how, like, bad pass protection affects a quarterback, right? Now, you heard the quote the other day in the quarterback tiers from Mike Sando about the great ones can push that aside, and I still haven't seen it. And that's, I mean, I think that's all fair. And like, as we've talked about a million times, he sometimes made it worse on himself and running himself into sacks and things like that. But yeah, look, it wasn't good. It wasn't good for him last year. So by just about any measure statistically, it was rough. Also, there's no question that things got better later and you did see progress from the beginning to the end.
Yeah. And again, like if the offensive line could just hold up, what does that mean for the receiving corps? Like, let's assume for the sake of this conversation that the offensive line is competent. So I guess take that for what you will. I'd be stunned if we were in a scenario where the offensive line we looked at and said, oh, that's a good one, right? But let's just say it's competent. Well, how good's this receiving core? Like, when you've got Tate, Ridley, Robinson as your top three, how good is that? Like, where does that stack up around the league? You know, first off, I mean, it's hard to know the answer to that without, you know, having seen Tate play in the NFL yet. But you did just draft in number four overall. Like, that's one of the things that I'd love to know heading into the year is, can we get a baseline level of offensive line play so we can evaluate, like, how good is the receiving core with those three kind of leading the way?
Yeah, it'd be nice, right? You know? And look, if your skill is good enough, that helps offset it, right? I mean, I think the Bengals have been an example of that, of, you know, your QB and receivers, and it's so elite that they were able to overcome and at times kind of hide a terrible offensive line. Terrible. You know, like they've worked on that offensive line, but they've had with some good seasons, terrible offensive lines. So, but also we're talking about like exceptional skill. You know, we're talking about like best of the best. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's not necessarily this, but yeah, like you hope like a Carnell Tate, when you have someone, you know, when you have anybody who forces a defense to commit extra people to them, and forces a defense to maybe be a little less aggressive because they're afraid of someone. I mean, that can make a difference. Is Carnell Tate a guy like that? I don't know, but that would help a lot.
Well, you know, and we mentioned too, like the 4,000 yard number, and we've talked about this on and off over the last couple of years. But, like, you know, I mentioned defenses catching up a little bit. There's a really interesting story today at The Athletic from Ted Nugent about, like, the too high safety, right? And, so basically defenses are trying to just absolutely stop the big plays down the field. And they'll live with you kind of driving the length of the field, putting together some 12, 13 play drive, because I think at some point you're going to screw it up, right? Like, that's kind of the thinking behind it. So, like, they've gone to a lot of these defenses are just sticking to this too high safety look and making absolutely sure that they're not going to get beat deep. And that's why teams have run the ball a little bit more the last couple of years. That's why you're taking some of the quicker options in the passing game. And Joe, I mean, logically, if that's the case and you play that out over the course of a 60-minute football game, your yardage total as a quarterback's probably not going to be as much as maybe we saw 5-10 years ago when quarterbacks were just absolutely lighting it up out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always a cycle. You know, it's back and forth on these. Someone comes up with an innovation on one side of the ball. Everybody else in the league on that side of the ball copies it. And then someone on the other side comes up with something to neutralize it, and everybody copies that, and it kind of bounces back and forth. And the defense is definitely – defensive guys have definitely figured some things out. So that's kind of where things are now. Someone mentioned on the text line real quick about Tannehill. It's like, I mean, if Tannehill couldn't do it with those receivers and stuff, you know, and that's a fair point. Now, Tannehill in 2020 had 38, you know, he had 3,800. He had 33 touchdowns.
Yeah.
He had 7.9 per attempt. That's basically a 4,000. Yeah, I mean, but he also had, you know, a 2,000-yard running back. So,
I was going to say, like, I mean, the Titans don't have a running back on the roster right now that they're going to give the ball to 400 times this year.
Right. So, I mean, but think about that offense. 2,000-yard running back, a 3,800-yard, 33 touchdown, 7.9 an attempt, quarterback, 66% completion, and that's why they scored 31 points a game. Boy, does that sound –
they couldn't win a freaking
playoff
game.
Boy, does that sound
game.
Far away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
could
the
not win a playoff game.
That was the team. Yeah, that was the team that lost to Lamar. Basically, yep. that one run, man, you know, killed them. But their offense was bad. Arthur Smith was interviewing. Didn't have his focus.
Yeah, 615-737-1025. Our phone number. More of your thoughts to get to on the Titans coming up next, including a commentary on Titans fans that I'm sure some of you will not find very surprising. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Today, the Nashville Sounds take on the Memphis Redbirds. First pitch at 6:45. You can catch all the action on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Maple Street Biscuit Company, and Social Cantina. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Joe, some breaking news in the AFC South. Jonathan Taylor has agreed to a 2-year contract extension with the Colts, $44 million in total, $39 million guaranteed. So Jonathan Taylor now under contract with the Colts through the 2028 season. So some running backs being paid over the last few days, Joe. You get the Bijan Robinson contract, now Jonathan Taylor signing in Indianapolis. People are still waiting on the Jahmyr Gibbs deal to be done at some point. So running backs getting paid this week so far around the league, Joe.
Yeah. You know, I remember when Derrick Henry got that extension for the Titans. I think that was the height of don't ever give a running back a second deal. There had been some bad ones, you know, prior to that had really not worked out. I almost look at it like Henry is sort of made it okay again to do that. Maybe I'm giving him more credit on that than is warranted, but we've had a few. You know, I mean, some of these guys are, you know, Barkley is another guy who obviously what he did with the Eagles, but I think it makes sense. It's not the money, you know, it's still compared to other positions, it's still a depressed market, and it's you know, the growth rate is way lower, but that's pretty good money. Robinson got good money. Gibbs will too. You know, sometimes you get some of these guys. It's not like all running backs are the same. It's not like running backs aren't important. It's just that they often have tread off the tires just after a few years. You know, but some of them don't, and you got to be able to identify that. And yeah, Jonathan Taylor's still pretty freaking good, man.
Well, we mentioned like some Vols. Like Chris Brazel gets hurt the other day. So he's going to miss the whole year. There was a Tennessee Vol in the NFL that had a nice payday the other day. Darnell Wright signed a 4-year, $116 million contract, $93 million of which is guaranteed, with the Chicago Bears the other day, Joe, making him one of the highest paid tackles in football.
Yeah, that is a big number. Congrats to him. Good for him. I still would love, like, how much money did he make on that one day? And obviously he's been good in the NFL. That's why I get this. But I'm just saying, like his entire, he was a 5-star and all that stuff, but that one day where he really did a job on Will Anderson,
yep,
against in that incredible Tennessee win over Alabama, was like, that was the day of like, whoa, man, this guy's no joke, and he has continued to ascend. So good for him. Hey, real quick, I actually meant to put this as a segment and then I just forgot. But did you see the Derrick Henry thing that people are freaking out about?
No.
Okay. Well, you know what? Maybe it would be, you know, we'll do it later. I'll find the audio so we can do it properly and listen to it, because it's been this, it's almost like one of those things where, you know, where you have a sound and some people hear one thing and then some people hear another thing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
What I'm talking about? It's almost like that. We'll do that in the 8 o'clock hour after Charles.
Is this like this dress that was floating around a few years ago where some people thought it was gold and some people thought it was blue?
Exactly. The same sort of thing. It's like somehow, yes. It's eye of the beholder or ear of the beholder. Yes.
Okay.
So, anyway.
Good to know.
Yes.
So, Joe, apparently Titans fans are among the most pessimistic group of fans in the NFL. I mean, that would not be surprising to me, given the fact that they've won 6 games in the last 2 years. But this is apparently something that's now official, that the Titans fans are the third most pessimistic in the NFL.
Well, casino.ca, which is Online Casinos Canada. So, hey, why they did this, I don't know. But they surveyed 5,000 fans. And a lot of different questions basically related to your optimism for your team. So, you know, you won't be surprised to see who – I guess I'm a little surprised. Number one is the Chiefs with a score, an optimism score out of 100 of 98. Number two, the Rams. That makes sense. 97. Seahawks, 97. You got the Eagles sitting there at 95. So out of 100, these are the optimism scores of surveyed fans, okay? Of course, you have number 11, the delusional Detroit Lions fans at 81. All the way down to the bottom. Now, wait, I'm a little bit confused here because – Oh my God, these people are so dumb. So this list, when there's a tie, okay, so like when there's a tie, they have the Rams and Seahawks number 2, right?
Yeah.
So it's Chiefs, Rams, Seahawks number 2, and then they list the Eagles at number 3.
Well, that would be 4th.
That would be 4th. and there's other ties. So like they've got other ties. So they list 29 teams, even though there's actually 32.
Whoo boy. Okay.
So I'm glad I'm good citing this study. Really smart. But anyway, so the Titans, so they're said to be 27th, but actually they are 30th in the league in terms of fan confidence with a score of 30 out of 100. Now, there's a big gap. The teams right ahead of them are the Colts and Dolphins tied, you know, for they say 26, but I mean, now they're making me do math. This is just – so they're tied for 29th. They have a score of 45, optimism. Titans, a huge drop to 30. Then you get the Browns at 25, and then you get down to the Jets at 22. So this – I mean,
it adds up.
Yeah, it adds up. But, a lot of different questions here, you know, about including about, like, quarterback and stuff like that. Confidence in quarterback, trust in head coach, satisfaction with offseason moves, belief the team is heading in the right direction. And so at least according to these surveyed Titans fans, optimism is low. I still think, and this is the time of year when optimism is going to be as high as it's going to be.
Well, we talked about it yesterday. I mean, the Titans have found themselves in the same conversation as, like, the Browns and the Jets. So it's time to pull your way out of it. I would love to fast forward to, like, a year from now. Let's do an optimism survey. And hopefully, like, Cam Ward's had such a great year that the Titans are, like, at the top 10 of fan optimism heading into the year. It's been a minute since they've been that.
That is a lofty, lofty goal. I mean, can they even get into – I mean, goodness, the – you know, the Giants are like at 56. Giants fans are like apparently
just – because of Harbaugh?
I mean, I guess, right? That's got to be a huge part of it. I mean, but like, why – Giants at 56, Jets at 22. Like, Jets fans are just down bad, man. They just, you know, despite what we played yesterday from WFAN about Saleh, I think that Jets fans have probably just accepted, like, whoever comes to their organization will be worse for it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's where people come to be bad, to be worse than they actually are. That's a tough scene.
One of the most amazing things in the history of sports last year, which is not intercepting an entire pass the entire year. I don't know if that will ever be done again.
Like you almost
intercept some on accident, right?
Like the
ball just pops in the air and you just catch it.
The ball goes off someone's helmet. And a D lineman catches it. I mean, do we know, by the way, what was the previous record?
We did talk about this at some point.
Yes. But it was like the Portsmouth Spartans from 1932 or something.
Yeah, when they threw
the ball three times a game. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Amazing.
So,
stuff.
I mean, all that really means is Cam cannot be the first one to throw a pick. The Jets are going to intercept a pass at some point this year. It better not be in week one against Cam Ward.
If it's like a pick six on the first play, I might just stop watching.
You know, I was so looking forward to this Jets game all offseason, and the more I think about it, the absolute just either total panic or total jubilation that's going to take place after this one game to start the year. Because of the circumstances around it. I don't know that I'm looking forward to it that much anymore. Like, it's just going to be crazy on that Monday.
Oh, God. It's cool, I guess, that, like, you could have such an impactful, such a conclusive game, right? But that puts a lot on it. Because, yeah, like, it's like it'll be really hard to get people, like, to even care about this team if they lose that game after one game, you know?
Like, it will be difficult.
Yeah, and I don't blame them. I mean, someone texted earlier, we were talking about the Titans being the worst of first, and he's like, you guys are full of crap. I'll be mowing the lawn by 12:30. I'm like, well, I mean, look, I can't sit here and tell you you're wrong, you know?
God, I hope it's at least like 1:45, man, you know?
Can you get to halftime?
You make it to halftime. Chad says, I will personally guarantee that the Jets will intercept Ward in the first game. It's the most Titans thing ever to break that streak. I can see the CBS graphic now and hear Charles Davis. please don't throw a pick in week one, Cam. So, and I don't want you to throw a pick ever, but you're going to. But just try to avoid it in week one.
Yeah, like just, you know, if you have to just airmail things out of bounds in that game, you know, don't be the one to break the streak. Texter says, I did call into that scrappy New York radio show to yell at them and got dumped in 5 seconds. Soft New Yorkers. Really?
Wow.
That's very disappointing. They seem like tough guys.
They did. We'll have the Rob rant coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
I like Creed. I like Nickelback.
Be quiet, everybody. Quiet.
Get out your syllabus, please. I've got an important lesson for you.
We work incredibly closely with Coach Jones and his staff to make sure that our players are hydrated at all times. One of the things that I tell the athletes to determine if they're hydrated or not, and this sounds silly, but is to look at their urine color. So if it's light yellow to clear, if it looks like lemonade, they're doing well. If it looks like apple juice, we have a problem.
Now we're getting into Butch Jones territory. What was the color?
You are a bad guy with your dark urine.
Why does it take me 14 minutes to pee?
I would let them pee around the field.
Sometimes the negativity is overwhelming.
He's talking about Joe Benigno.
Don't talk ever. I'm talking, not you. Gonna open up the door.
It is time for the Rob Rant, served by the Wine Cellar in Hendersonville. Another legendary mashup from Ian Safar, which, as I told him yesterday off the air, has become my favorite part of the show. It really has. It's just, it's wonderful. Very well done, Ian.
Thank you.
Very well done.
Beautiful.
All right, so listen, we've talked a lot about college football and everything that's gone on basically off the field, right, when it comes to, you know, the scheduling and the college football playoff and all this other stuff. And now fall camp has come, so I've actually, you know, we're entering into the time, Joe, where I start to get really excited about college football. Because, look, I love the NFL. I'm always excited about the NFL. I love football, so I'm excited to watch football. But if you force me to choose, this is just me, force me to choose which one I could watch, I would pick college football over the NFL. That's just me. I love college football. Some people totally disagree with that. Most people probably does totally disagree with that, and that's fine. And college football is awesome. And I am a Tennessee fan. Love watching Tennessee play football. And now that we've gotten here and fall camp has rolled around, I was talking with a couple of buddies, one of which is a Florida fan. And we have basically just gone back and forth at each other over the last decade plus because it's a rivalry. And Tennessee and Florida have played every year of my life. I'm about to be 34 years old. There hasn't been a time when Tennessee was not playing Florida in my lifetime on a yearly basis. And here we are, Joe, and they're not playing this year. And I guess it's really starting to set in now that the season is around the corner, and I absolutely hate it. I just do. And, you know, there's Tennessee-Florida is not the only game. I mean, there's a ton of games around college football that either this year or over the last couple of years we've lost thanks to conference expansion and all this other crap. I mean, it's objectively amazing that, like, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State don't play each other anymore. Like, it's just stupid. But Tennessee and Florida not playing each other this year really bothers me. I mean, it really does. And it bothered me at the time, and I understand what's happening and the 9-game schedule, and you got your 3 permanent opponents, and you can't make everybody happy in that. But, like, Tennessee-Florida's not playing this year. Alabama LSU's not playing this year. Like, go back 10 years ago and utter that sentence. It's insane. Like, I remember there's been like 3 Alabama LSU games that were dubbed the game of the century, and they're not playing this year. Like, it's just insane to me that this is happening this way. So I am disgusted that Tennessee is not playing Florida this year. And it feels like, for whatever reason, Joe, the fact that fall camp has rolled around, it's become real to me that it's not happening, and it really, really bothers me heading into this year.
Yeah, it should. Like you said, you mentioned Oklahoma State, Oregon State, you know, Pittsburgh, West Virginia is one. Notre Dame, USC, but that's more their own thing with their own scheduling, you know, and luckily they're bringing that back. Notre Dame's done a bunch of weird stuff with rivalries that they've kind of just let fade. That's a little bit different, but just expansion related stuff that got killed of all those things, Nebraska, Oklahoma. I mean, Tennessee, Florida, to me, I really don't think this is just like a Nashville, Tennessee perspective. I mean, you're a Tennessee fan, so of course it's personal for you. But I think college football wide, I mean, I think that's as bad as it gets. I know that Tennessee, Florida isn't what it used to be. It used to be probably as good a game as there was in September every year. I mean, and one of the biggest games of the year in college football, year after year after year. It's not that, but the history is, it's still a great rivalry, and it should happen, and there's still hatred there, and it's sad to see it go. I wouldn't pick it personally over Vanderbilt just because I do think that the in-state – I mean, I think in-state rivalries are special. It's a different deal. And that one has at least become – it's become competitive, whereas for decades it wasn't. So I wouldn't pick it. I wouldn't pick Florida over that one. But, man, if there was any way to preserve it – and they did have different models that would have. I wish they would have done it.
I wish they would have done it too. It just – and look, you know, there's Tennessee-Georgia you could throw in there too. And, I mean, they played Georgia basically every year of my life too. So, like – it's not the same history of Tennessee and Florida and the rivalry there, but I get it. You're a conference expansion. You're not going to keep every game, but it does. Like, there's so much on the field, and I've heard Tim Tebow talk about this a little bit. I think some other people have talked about this. You know, the rivalries are a big part of the game, right? Like that's kind of the fabric of college football, and I think college football rivalry, and some in college basketball too, but college football rivalries are just different than you see in any other sport, right? Like it just, it's hard to even explain unless you've been there and you've experienced it. And you know, there's just a bunch of discourse that goes on that I think makes it a lot of fun. And the fact that we're losing some of those on a yearly basis, like I know Tennessee and Florida are going to play again, like they'll play next year and that's fine. But not having it every year, I think you're losing something there. By the way, I did misspeak. Alabama LSU are playing this year. It's Florida LSU that are not playing this year,
okay.
Which is just amazing to me.
Yeah, you are losing something. And look, this has been, and it, I guess maybe it's a little bit more on the Tennessee side, but this has been a barometer game, right? I mean, this has been a game that, and you've had streaks where you haven't won there and all that stuff. I mean, it's been a thorn in Tennessee side. I mean, I guess – some Tennessee fans might say, yeah, you know, even when we've been better than them, how many times have we been better than them and still lost to them? Like, it's been a real pain in the butt. But
yeah.
I also think, like, some of those wins are special against Florida, even with Florida, you know, not the program now, you know, than it used to be. 10 years ago, good old Butch, man. That's still one of the greatest environments, and I think we were both in the stadium that day. One of the best environments that I've ever seen was the Tennessee in those stupid gray uniforms, but that Tennessee win over Florida. I mean, that was incredible stuff. And yeah, it is. You lose something, and I mean, there's so much to complain about with college sports, but things that mean so much to people, that mean so much to fans, you know, like, there should be some non-negotiables, and yeah. Unfortunately, there aren't.
There are not. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Charles Robinson will be with us coming up next. We will get into all things NFL with him. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.